eighth cycle, as was stated here in one of these verses. So this Krishna Dvaitrayana, he's very special. Now, of course, he divided up all the Vedic literatures. It wasn't that he only worked on the Puranas. He worked on all of them. But the point here is, he gave more attention to the Puranas and Itihasas. That is also explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, that Vyas himself condensed the Purana. He then handed it over to Sutta, but Sutta did not do a lot other than speak it. So, therefore, Jiva Goswami says here in 15.5 that the Puranas and Itihasas, they have special importance because of their promulgator. The person who got them together and presented them. In other words, his hand is much more prominent in the Itihasas and Puranas than it is in the other, in the four Vedas. Just imagine, you know, condensing something down from 1 billion verses to 400,000 and making sure you get the essence, you don't miss any points. And it's all just the very cream of that 1 billion. That's a big job. It's a very big job. And Mahabharata, from 60 million verses to 100,000 or so. Very big job. All done personally by Vyas himself. So, therefore the Puranas and Itihasas, they have special importance because of him. Because of his input. And then in, so that those points are covered in 15.5 and 16.1, you know, you get these statements like, even Brahma and the other demigods don't know what Vyas does, or what he knows, because he's Narayan. He's considered so knowledgeable that people have taken things, it says here, out of the sky of his mind. Now, of course, it appears that the point here is that sound moves through sky, through ether. And it doesn't move through anything else, actually. Sound moves through ether. So all sound is in the sky. That means all knowledge is there, in a sense. So in other words, what he's saying, the Skanda Purana is saying, is that all knowledge is in Vyasa's mind. And anyone who appears to have some knowledge of their own, they've just taken it out of his mind, actually. So Vyas is really like the supreme authority. And then we go on to 16.2, there it mentions Gotama's curse. This is an interesting story. This is told in the Vamana Purana. And our acharyas like Baladev Vijibhushan, in his commentary on Tattvasandhava, he tells the whole story of how there was a famine in the universe, but Gotama Rishi, he performed great austerities. He was given a benediction by Lord Brahma that he would be able to produce food. So he did. Then he invited all the Brahmins in human society to his ashram. And they were able to live there through the famine, eating food very nicely, because he had this special benediction from Lord Brahma. However, the famine ended after a while. And all the Brahmins wanted to go home, but Gotama insisted, no, no, you must stay a little longer. This is not uncommon in Vedic society. And a little longer normally means a month or two. Just like when Queen Kunti offered her prayers to Krishna in the 8th chapter of the 1st canto, he stayed on for another month or 2 months or something. She was basically asking him, please stay on longer. So the same thing happened. And then they, a little later, they said, well, you know, we want to go home now. The famine was over. famine's over, we want to go home. He said, no, no, stay a little longer. This happened several times. In the end, it was getting too much for them. So they made a plan. They tricked Gotama. They made a calf out of straw and put it by the path that he would walk down to take bath in the river or lake early in the morning. So he walked down the next morning. It was still dark. He kicked the calf. And then those Brahmins came and said, oh, you killed a calf. We cannot stay with you. We're going. You're a cow killer. So they all left. And Gotama was thinking, what, me, a cow killer? That's not possible. So he searched and he found the calf made of straw. And he realized what had happened. So he cursed the Brahminical order that you lose your knowledge. So they lost their ability to understand the Vedas. The Brahminical order became fallen. And this is one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, why, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says he comes in order to reestablish Dharma. Dharma samsthapanataya. He again, in the form of Vyas, they had to appear to re-establish the Vedic literatures, to re-establish the disciplic succession, the whole Vedic institution, because the Brahmins became bewildered. So then Vyas took the Vedic literatures, and then he did his work, because the Brahmins were just not capable of understanding. Yeah. So that is described then in 16.2. It was so bad that the demigods went and prayed to Lord Narayan that you have to incarnate to re-establish the Vedic knowledge and the Brahminical order like this. So therefore, he appeared himself as Vyas in this case. Of course, there was the situation with Kamsa and company, sort of like the political situation. So Krishna came himself to deal with that. So let us go on now and try and do this next little section. It's very short. Subsection D. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it was just at the end. Just some time, like a couple of generations before. Two generations. Yeah. He's like the age of their grandfather. He's the father of their father. He's the father of Pandu. Okay. Let's read these two little sections here. Two little texts. So this is now, we're now really going to get into the subject of how the Puranas are more important even than the Vedas. Not only are they Vedic, so, you could say they're on the same level as the four Vedas, but actually they're more important than the four Vedas. Bear in mind that the point we're going to come to very soon is that Srimad Bhagavatam, even out of the Puranas, is the best, and therefore it is the ultimate source of knowledge completely. Yeah. So we're gradually, step by step, coming to that point. And the next step is that the Puranas are more important than the Vedas. So 16.3. The word Veda in this context also implies the Puranas and Itihasas. He is referring here to the very last sentence in 16.2 at the top of the page there, that in the form of Vyas, Lord Hari himself restored the neglected Vedas and the neglected Puranas and Itihasas. Thus we have established that the best way to proceed is to examine the Itihasas and Puranas. We've established that, right? Because we've lost so much of the Vedas that they're basically, it's impractical to try and use them. And the Puranas are at the very least on the same level at the very least. So it has been established then that the best way to proceed to understand this apurusheya shabda, this transcendental authoritative knowledge, is to examine the itihasas and puranas. However, he says, even among these two, moreover, there is evidence that the puranas are more important than the itihasas. As stated in the Narada Purana, that's the Brihan Naradiya Purana. O lovely one, this is Lord Shiva actually speaking to Parvati. O lovely one, I consider the message of the Puranas more important than that of the Vedas. Without doubt, all the Vedas are given a firm foundation in the Puranas. Anyone who disrespects the Puranas will have to take his next birth as an animal. So watch out, all those people who think like that. Even if he's very self-controlled and peaceful, he will achieve no good destination. And 17, part 1. And in the Prabhaskanda of the Skanda Purana, we find the statement, O best of Brahmins, I consider the purport of the Puranas as unquestionable as the Vedas themselves. Without doubt, all the Vedas are given a firm foundation in the Puranas. Sometime in the past, the Vedas became afraid that these people are going to distort my meaning because they're inadequately trained in proper hearing. But at that time, the Itihasas and Puranas came forward to give the Vedas an unquestionable foundation. What cannot be found in the Vedas, O Brahmanas, is found in the Smritis. And what cannot be located in either is clearly described in the Puranas. O Brahmins, one who knows the Vedas along with their supplements and the Upanishads, but does not know the Puranas, is not really learned. So the Puranas are even more important than the Vedas. You can see Lord Shiva is speaking there. He's a great authority. And he says that these people who think that the Puranas are not authoritative, not only do they not understand properly, but they're actually degraded. You know, this is such a heavy statement to make about traditional Brahmins, Vedic Brahmins, to say they're animals. So Lord Shiva, he really means what he's saying. He's really trying to make a point in an extremely strong way. Then in 17.1, it's interesting. First of all, the speaker says that I consider the purport of the Puranas to be as good as that of the Vedas. But then he goes on, takes the point further, that the Vedas have a foundation in the Puranas. Now, what does that imply? You know, if something doesn't have a foundation and you try to build on it, then whatever you try to build without a foundation will collapse. In other words, you have to have the Puranas. You need the Puranas. You cannot just study the Vedas. The Vedas are dependent on the Puranas. But we haven't seen any statements that the Puranas are dependent on the Vedas. Then, this is a nice point, sometime in the past the Vedas became afraid that these people are going to distort my meaning. So who are these people? They're the Vedic Brahmins. Because in those days no one else had access to the Vedas. So the Vedas saw that in due course of time, these people, the Brahmins, are going to become degraded. And we see that today. If you meet, you know, a lot of these traditional caste-conscious Brahmins, sure, it's bad. Very arrogant, puffed up, don't accept Krishna, so they're kind of atheistic, really. So the Vedas became frightened that these people are going to distort my meaning. So then the Itihases and Puranas came forward and said, don't worry, we'll protect you. In effect, that's what it means. That the Itihases and Puranas, they could see that they were stronger. They could see that they were stronger. So they said, don't worry, we'll support you. Then another point, taking it even further. What cannot be found in the Vedas? In other words, from the outset, we should know that you cannot find all knowledge, even at the best of times, in the Vedas. You have to study the Smriti. We wrote on the board the other day, the divisions of Shruti and Smriti. So there are different sections in the Smriti. The Itihasas are one section, the Puranas are another. There are other sections also. So, not all knowledge is in the Vedas. So certain things, if you can't find them in the Vedas, just look in the Smriti and you'll find it there. But some things that you cannot find in the Vedas, and you also cannot find in the Smriti, not including the Puranas, of course, you haven't looked there yet, but it's clearly described in the Puranas. So therefore he concludes by saying that one who knows the Vedas, along with all their various parts, including the Upanishads, but does not know the Puranas, is not really learned. So these are very powerful verses, which are leading us towards the point, well, they're confirming strongly how the Puranas are not only Vedic, but they are the best of all the Vedic literatures. They are the most essential of all the Vedic literatures. Yeah. And everything else that you can call Vedic is dependent, actually, on the Puranas. I think that'll have to do us for today. Yes, Ron? See, there are Smriti Shastras, which are rules and regulations. Sometimes the term Smriti is used in a very broad sense to include the Puranas and Itihasas. But in this context, because in the next sentence, or later in the same sentence, it is saying that if you can't find something in Smriti, you can find it in the Puranas, then the term Smriti is obviously being used in a narrower sense. The Smriti Shastras, they're like the Dharma Shastras, the Artha Shastras, and there are actually some scriptures which are called the Smriti Shastras. They're rules and regulations for sacrifice, for, you know, it's like Ayurveda is material science, different types of descriptive shastras explaining how to live, how to order one's life, how to balance one's life, like that. Yeah, so they are sometimes referred to as the Smriti. That's okay, because we're already shown, it's already done. Yeah, that's already done. Yes. We've already, see, he said at the end of 15:2, we have now established our point. So he's not going to just go on and on. But he does from time to time quote Shruti. He does, definitely. Yeah. But then it's just as another evidence, really. Rather than, okay, here we have, you know, the most authoritative word. It just becomes another type of evidence from this point on, the Shruti. Yeah. Well, it means that, you know, you can understand the Vedas. You can only understand the Vedas, really, by understanding the Puranas. Yeah. If you don't understand the Puranas, which means, you know, ultimately understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then if you read the four Vedas and the Upanishads and so on, you're going to have an awfully hard time understanding that they're actually pointing you towards Krishna. But they are. So, you know, you have to. But that only becomes clear in the Puranas. Yeah. In the four Vedas and Upanishads and so on, it's not so clear. At all, it's not so clear. Little mention here and there. So it's like that. Right. That's right. Well, see, Mahabharata is specifically to do with Krishna and the Pandavas. Yeah. So, you know, we would certainly understand that going back in time, like at the beginning, the Mahabharata was there. But at some point, of course, we don't know where exactly, it became kind of lost. Yeah. So, Vyasa's hand in Mahabharata is very clear. You know, his input in Mahabharata is very, very clear. So here he's called not just the editor, but the author. Now, it's not exactly that he's the author, but his input is very great in the Mahabharata. Yeah, it's very great. Okay. You could add the Vedas and Vedanta Sutra. Sorry? Yeah, but the implication is that we mentioned it the other day, it's there in Sarvasamvadini, that if we say, okay, we can't understand the Vedas, because a lot of it's lost, but we have Vedanta Sutra, which is the Veda Anta. It's the conclusion of the Vedas. So maybe we could just use that then. And then we'd be able to understand the Vedas. But the problem there is that there are commentaries or there is disagreement on the meaning of Vedanta Sutra. There are commentaries like Shankaracharya. You know, Ramanujacharya, he did his Sri Bhasya, then Baladeva Jibhushan, but then Shankaracharya did his. So it's more really meaning on Vedanta Sutra, actually. Then there's that also. There's all sorts of people like that, yeah. Yeah. Who worked on the Vedas and tried to explain the Vedas. And you know, even I think it's Jaimini. He just imagines certain things. He says it must be like this. There's certain parts, I don't know even what exactly he was involved in, but there are certain parts existing which only took you to a certain point in his process. So he then just imagined some other parts. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu? Because he's Surya Narayan. He's an empowered expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, I see. Well, maybe he wasn't so puffed up. You know, Vaishampayana is a bit of a case himself. And Yajnavalkya felt, you know, that he had, you know, like good reason to feel upset that he shouldn't have been kicked out. Yeah. Vaishampayana, his disciples are called something like the Chakrahas or the Charakas. The Charakas, I think it is, means those who delivered their guru from the sin of killing a Brahmin. Somehow Vaishampayana killed a Brahmin, so his disciples did austerities to deliver him from that. Anyway, it appears, you know, Yajnavalkya, it appears that he wasn't so much in the wrong, and therefore the sun god was prepared to give him that knowledge. You know, maybe, see, this is not addressed here directly, but, you know, I mean, it's obviously the case that the Supreme Lord was prepared to give him the knowledge, and Vyas did not take the Yajurveda away from Vaishampayana either. So maybe it was some transcendental misunderstanding or something like that. Right. Right. Yeah. I think we should finish here because it's 5 o'clock. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Yesterday we were discussing how the Puranas are not only Vedic, not only are they equal to the Vedas, but actually they're better, they're more important than the Vedas. And a number of verses were quoted to establish that point. And it was expressed in a couple of ways. One was about the realization of Vyas, and the other main way was how people who study the Vedas, but actually their understanding of the absolute truth and everything in general is not complete unless they study the Puranas. And in fact, they have to study the Puranas in order to understand the Vedas. There are things, important things in the Puranas which are not even there in the Vedas. And everything is so clear in the Puranas. So in different ways like this, Srila Jiva Goswami established how the Puranas are more important than the Vedas. And that took us up to text 17.1. So now we're going to go on to subsection E. There is a hierarchy among the Puranas. All Puranas are not equal. So there's a hierarchy there, and how to understand that. That is a short little subsection from 17.2 to 18.1. Let us... I think I'll just read through all the verses then, through to 18.1. Okay, so 17.2. Even though we have thus settled the question of the Purana's authoritativeness, we need to next consider a doubt regarding their current status. Less intelligent people of modern times find it difficult to understand them because their original texts are not completely available. Now, that is actually just in some cases, not in all cases. But there are definitely some cases where their original texts are not completely available. And because, for the most part, they promote the worship of a variety of deities. So there's a little commentary there, and we'll address that when we come to it. But the problems then are unavailability of some texts. There's some substitution, interpolation, call it, of invalid texts in some cases. But in the case of our Vaishnav Puranas, there's some important evidence from Sridhar Swami which substantiates the validity of particularly Srimad Bhagavatam and also Vishnu Purana, which are the two main Vaishnav Puranas, two main Puranas really. 17.3. As the Matsya Purana states, a historical text is a Purana if it has the five defining characteristics. There are five characteristics of a Purana. Otherwise, if it has less than the five, it is known as an Akhyana. In Puranas describing days of Brahma in the mode of goodness, the Supreme Lord Hari is mostly glorified. in those describing days of Brahma, in the mode of passion, there is especially glorification of Brahma. In those describing days of Brahma in the mode of ignorance, there is glorification of Agni and of Shiva. In those describing mixed days, Pati and the Pitas are discussed. And the point that we'll try and draw out a little bit there is how to understand the word Kalpa, which is used here, translated here by Gopi Puranadana Prabhu to mean day of Brahma. But there's another possible understanding, and actually in the end it doesn't really make a big difference. In fact, it doesn't really make any difference, but we'll just mention it. 17.4. Here, glorification of Agni, the fire god, means of Vedic sacrifices, which he executed with offerings into various sacred fires. In the phrase, and of Shiva, also, the word also implies also of Shiva, including his wife, Durga. So, that sentence there is referring to those Puranas which are popular in days of Lord Brahma, where the mode of ignorance is more prominent, is the most prominent mode. In other words, the Puranas in the mode of ignorance. You'll see we've written upon the board the different Puranas which are in the different modes. Write it down, because we're going to ask you about this in our test on Friday. During mixed days means during the many days of Brahma in which goodness, passion, and ignorance are all prominent. Of Saraswati means the various demigods who are indirectly indicated by reference to her, since she is the presiding deity of various kinds of verbal expression. In other words, all different demigods and demigoddesses who are connected with knowledge, particularly knowledge, Gayatri, for example. Of the Pitas, the celestial forefathers, means of the ritual activities which lead to attaining them, in accordance with the Shruti statement, by Vedic rituals one achieves the world of the Pitas. And then, text 18, part 1. Such being the facts, we can understand that the Puranas mentioned in the Matsya Purana are divided into natural categories according to the kinds of days of Brahma they contain narrations of. But how can we define a hierarchy of these categories to determine which is superior? It might be suggested that this can be done with a hierarchy of the modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. If so, we can conclude that Puranas and other scriptures in the mode of goodness have the most authority to teach us about transcendental reality. According to the reasoning of such statements as, from Bhagavad Gita 14:17, from the mode of goodness, knowledge develops. And Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:24, in the mode of goodness, one can realize the absolute truth. So, this is an important point. There's a hierarchy amongst the Puranas. It's not just the Puranas as a whole, which we're interested in. There's certain parts of the Puranas that we're interested in. And first of all, are you having trouble reading that? Mode of goodness, there's Srimad Bhagavatam, Vishnu Purana, Garuda Purana, Padma Purana, Varaha Purana, and one other. Brihanaradiya Purana, where that famous verse Harianam, Harianam, Harianam Eva Kevalam comes from. Let's just, which ones can't you read? Brahma, Brahma Purana. So these are the Puranas in the different modes. Before we go into that, he does bring up the point which
the point which is there in 17:2, that sometimes some people at least have difficulty even with the Puranas, because some of them are lost. That's a fact. And amongst those which are not lost, sometimes different things have been added. There are cases like that. And at any rate, there is this tendency in every Purana, which is, they're all focusing on one deity or one group of deities, there is a tendency in all of them to focus on their particular deity or deities and to promote them as being of exceptional, outstanding importance beyond the importance of any other deity. So we did mention right at the beginning, I think, that in some of the Shiva Puranas, for example, those some of the Puranas in the mode of ignorance, it said that Shiva stood Bhagavan Swam. However, this is not an insurmountable problem, because Lord Brahma, he also speaks one verse, Lord Shiva speaks a verse in Skanda Purana, and Jiva Goswami draws our attention to this in Paramatma Sundarbha. There is one verse, Shiva Shastreshu Tadgrayam Bhagavat Shastra Yogiyat Paramo Vishnur Evaikas Tajjnana Moksha Sadhanam Shastranam Nirnayas Tu Eshas Tad Anyan Mohanaya Hi. Lord Shiva is telling Durga, the statements of the Shiva scriptures should be accepted only when they agree with the Vishnu scriptures. Lord Vishnu is the only Supreme Lord, and knowledge of Him is the path to liberation. That is the conclusion of all the scriptures. Any other conclusions are meant only to bewilder the people. Isn't that interesting? That's Lord Shiva in the Skanda Purana. Yeah. Lord Shiva said that. Yeah. Repeat it. I repeat the translation. The statements of the Shiva scriptures should be accepted only when they agree with the Vishnu scriptures. Lord Vishnu is the only Supreme Lord, and knowledge of Him is the path to liberation. That is the conclusion of all the scriptures. Any other conclusions are meant only to bewilder the people. So, anyway, you do get all these statements. Shiva is supreme. Durga is frequently promoted as being supreme. Ganesh may be the supreme. Indra may be the supreme. Shiva, of course, may easily be the supreme. Brahma, and so on and so forth. So, it's interesting, Jiva Goswami says that less intelligent people become confused by this, not the more intelligent people. Now, as far as our scriptures are concerned, particularly Srimad Bhagavatam, and then secondly, Vishnu Purana, Sridhar Swami, quite some time before Lord Chaitanya, in his commentary, he has written out the entire text, with the exception of a few verses, in the case of each scripture. So, when he did that, he stated that these versions are correct. Now, he's also coming in line from Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya was not too long before him. Madhvacharya is directly a disciple of Vedavyasa himself. He met him in Badrig Ashram and received the Vedic knowledge from him. And Madhvacharya had photographic memory. There was one time, and there are many stories, but there was one time, there was one teacher who wouldn't let his students write down his teachings because he was afraid that they would then be able to defeat them if they got them written down and they could think about them and look at them. So Madhvacharya went and said, no problem, I won't write anything down. He just heard it once and he got it all, then he wrote it down like the next day. And there were a couple of other times he did things like that. So on the basis of Sridhar Swami's confirmation and our understanding that Madhvacharya, not long before Sridhar Swami, received these scriptures directly from Vyasa himself. So therefore we accept, even though, you know, interpolation has taken place in the case of some of the scriptures, some of the Puranas, but in the case of these Puranas which we are mainly dealing with, then we accept that they're authoritative. Lord Chaitanya accepted that they were authoritative on the basis of the confirmation of Sridhar Swami. So that was 17.2. Then 17.3, 4, and 18.1 are really discussing the subject about the hierarchy. So there are Puranas which are predominantly in the different modes. Matsya Purana is quoted here in 17.3. As I said, there are two possible understandings of this term kilpa. In 17.3, you'll see there's 2.5 verses quoted, actually, it looks like, for Matsya Purana. In the first one, in the second line, it says, Satvikeshu Chakalpeshu. So, the term kalpa is being used. In the sattvic kalpa, or in sattvic kalpas, plural, or rajasic, passionate kalpas, or ignorant kalpas, then certain Puranas become more popular because the people are more in that type of nature, that type of mood, so they're more attracted to that type of Purana. Or you can just take kalpa to mean, it's possible at least, theoretically, to take the term kalpa to just mean mood, desire, state of consciousness. So if we were to take it like that, then it would read that in Puranas, which are in the mood or the nature of the mode of goodness, then the Supreme Lord Hari is mainly glorified. In those Puranas, which are in the mood or they have the nature of the mode of passion, then there's especially glorification of Brahma. And in those which are of the nature of the mode of ignorance, there's there's glorification of Agni and Shiva. Shivasya cha. That cha indicates Durga. So Matsya Purana then goes on. Padma Purana, in fact, gives very specific details, as we've written on the board, which Puranas are in which modes. So we know which Puranas are in which modes, and if you read them, then it becomes kind of apparent, actually, in due course of time, how they're in the different modes, because those Puranas dealing with Shiva and Durga, they promote things like animal sacrifice, sacrifices involving offering of liquor, human sacrifices, even Mahabhairava Puja. Kamsa was going to perform that sacrifice when he invited Krishna to come for the wrestling match. That's described in the Bhagavatam. Human sacrifice to Mahabhairava, a form of Lord Shiva. In the passionate Puranas, there tends to be what you might call sexual overtones. Something like that. Actually, many of these Puranas depict Radha and Krishna, Sita and Ram. Many, if not practically all of them. But when Radha and Krishna or Sita and Rama's pastimes are depicted in these passionate Puranas, then there tends to be that kind of sexual type of in her apparent mood being suggested. Very different from Srimad Bhagavatam's mood, which is very, very pure. So, seeing these Puranas then have been officially categorized in terms of the modes, and seeing we understand from Bhagavad Gita, for example, from Srimad Bhagavatam, for example, and of course there are many, many places where it is pointed out that sattva is higher than raja or tama. So therefore we can understand that of the Puranas, the sattvic Puranas are the highest. So we have narrowed it down now from just the Puranas to the sattvic Puranas. And that takes us on to subsection F, a very short little subsection, in which Srimad Bhagavatam is established as the topmost of all scriptures and the topmost praman, topmost source of knowledge about the Absolute Truth. Is everyone following us so far? Is anyone completely lost or half lost? Yes? Yeah. Kalpa can mean a day of brahma, and our translator, Gopi Brahmadanapur, has translated with that understanding, as you can see. Kalpa can also mean state of mind, state of consciousness, like a kalpa vriksha. Vriksha means tree. Kalpa vriksha means a tree which fulfills your kalpa, your desire. Fulfills what's in your mind, fulfills what is your mood or state of consciousness. Yeah. So there are two possible understandings there. But actually it doesn't make any difference in terms of the meaning. The meaning just ends up that when people are in the mood of passion, when the general atmosphere in the particular day of Brahma, when the general atmosphere is more in the mode of goodness, then the Puranas in the mode of goodness become popular. And when the general mood is one of passion, the people are more passionate, then they're more attracted to the passionate Puranas, so they become more popular and more prominent. In other words, you end up with Puranas in the mode of goodness, Puranas in the mode of passion, and Puranas in the mode of ignorance, one way or the other. And Padma Purana, specifically in 18.1, in the purport, it's not actually stated here in the verse, but in Jiva Goswami's service in the Bible, he lists out this few verses from Padma Purana. It's written up here. Yeah. Yeah. Long time, right? Well, you know, we have different types of days, don't we? I guess Brahma does also. That's the inter. See, Gopi Pranadanapuro, who translated here, he gave evidence for that. The Matsya Purana, which he's quoting from there in whatever it is, 17.3 or something, 17.3, then Matsya Purana goes on to say just that. To say just that. That this is referring to days of Brahma, where certain of the modes are particularly prominent. Yeah. Okay, so let us go on now. We've come to that point. I think it's fairly clear how the Puranas in the mode of goodness, I think it's quite obvious, really, how they must be a better source of knowledge overall. Because there's being sattvic, just we understand from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes it very clear how the mode of goodness is considerably superior to the other modes. The other modes are really dumb compared to the mode of goodness. Okay, so now, 18.2 and 18.3. Even so, what one standard can reconcile all these Puranas, which discredit one another with divergent opinions, even when discussing the same absolute truth. Someone may point out that the powerful saint Sri Vyasa produced the Vedanta Sutra just to accomplish this task of determining the purport of the entire Vedas and Puranas. Therefore, this person will propose the meaning of all these scriptures should be ascertained by reference to the Vedanta Sutra. Well, this idea has already come up, right? A few verses ago, I think it was in 12, that if seeing the meaning of the Vedas or spot of the Vedas are lost and so on, we have the Vedanta Sutra. So why not just understand the Vedas by understanding the Vedanta Sutra? So this is basically the same point again. But then he says, our conclusions will not be respected by followers of sages who wrote other sutras. And apart from that, certain authors have interpreted the Vedanta Sutras, very esoteric and terse aphorisms, in such a way as to distort the meaning. What authority then can actually serve to reconcile all of this? So let us just explain that a little. It's kind of self-evident, I think, more mainly. We want to clearly understand, really, which of the Puranas is best, because it's hard. You know, they're telling stories which have one story happened at one time, then there's another story which happened at another time. Sometimes two stories are combined in one. Can any of you think of an example of that from Srimad Bhagavatam? Yes, good. The appearance of Lord Varaha probably explains that Jiva Goswami explains, actually, that that two appearances of Lord Varaha have been merged in that description. So you get these chronological problems. You get some pretty kind of way-out personalities cropping up. And you get all these different deities being promoted, you know, at the expense of each other. So then you might say, well, let us just go to the Vedanta Sutra then. Because Vedanta Sutra, let us not forget, it is not just a summary of the Vedas, but also of the Puranas. Because it was the last one done, except for Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. But there are two problems there. Actually, we discussed this, I think, yesterday. There are two problems. One is that some people have done commentaries on the Vedas and Puranas altogether, which disagree with Vyasa's Vedanta Sutra. The other problem is that some people have done commentaries on Vedanta Sutra, which tend to confuse the understanding of Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra, as he says, is made up of very esoteric and terse. Terse means extremely short aphorisms. So it's not easy. So then, where can we turn? So 18.3, here we have it. This is it. This is really it. The five criteria, he says, which must be fulfilled if we are to be able to point to one particular source of knowledge and say this is it. If that particular shastra fulfills these five requirements, we would have such a basis of reconciliation, one might comment, if there was one scripture which fits the definition of a Purana, and of course, particularly, preferably, a Sattvic Purana, for that matter. It has a Purusheya authority. That's the second point. It's clearly a Purusheya, clearly not manufactured by human beings. It contains the essential ideas of all the Vedas, Itihasas, and Puranas. In other words, it very comprehensively and very clearly presents the real conclusions of all these important scriptures. Plus, number four, it gives support to the positions of Vedanta Sutra. So you can reconcile it with Vedanta Sutra. And fifth, it is currently available in full on this earth. Well said. See, you can see he's getting really fired up here. Well said. Because you have called to mind our own most preferred authority, the Emperor of Pramans, Srimad Bhagavatam. So there are five conditions, and we will now just run through the reasons why, how Srimad Bhagavatam does actually meet all those requirements. What's the first? It has to be a Purana. All the five characteristics of a Purana. See, there's Purana and Mahapurana. Srimad Bhagavatam is a Mahapurana. There's 10 characteristics. I don't know if you've looked on, but we're going to be going into the 10 characteristics of Srimad Bhagavatam in due course of time. But anyway, the five subjects of a regular Purana are creation, dissolution, genealogy, manvantaras, and the reigns of different kings. Creation, dissolution, genealogy, manvantaras, and the reigns of different kings. They're the five subjects of a regular Purana. Okay, so how does Srimad Bhagavatam comply with these five requirements? Now, I hope we're not confusing ourselves here. The five characteristics of a regular Purana are not the five conditions which were... You got that? Okay. Okay, so... First thing is that it must be a Purana and preferably in the mode of goodness. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is not just in the mode of goodness. It is in Shuddha Sattva, transcendental goodness. This is pointed out in Srimad Bhagavatam 12:13-18. Famous verse, part of which reads, Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. Which means that Srimad Bhagavatam is the Amala Purana, spotless Purana. Even goodness is considered to be, from the transcendental perspective, a type of contamination. Yeah. Of course, you know, goodness is also like a gateway in a certain sense to the transcendental platform. But compared to the actual transcendental platform, goodness is not the same. It is not the same. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is not just in goodness as the other Puranas in goodness are, but it is very distinctly transcendental and completely pure. Only spiritual. This is why in the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's the statement, Dharma Projitakaitavotra Paramonya Matsuranam Satam. That this Srimad Bhagavatam begins by completely rejecting all religious activities that are materially motivated and propounds only the highest truth. So materially motivated includes the mode of goodness. Yeah. Then it must be a Purusheya, not coming from a human source, from a...